Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for December 7th, 2007. This week, surviving in the future will take ingenuity, not just to overcome technological hurdles, but also to solve problems we've created for ourselves. Problems like antibiotic resistance, caused by the overwhelming success of antibiotics in the first place. Suzanne, what's all this about?
Antibiotic-resistant staph infections are much more common now than ever before. That's because we've been overusing antibiotics since they were first invented. Killing the bacteria outright leaves only the most virulent strains, which then reproduce and spread. When they're directly threatened by antibiotics, these superbacteria fight back. They signal each other to turn on genes that allow them to circumvent our immune system. But immunologist Kim Janda and his colleagues at the Scripps Institute have devised a way to shut them up.
What we've done is created a vaccine which basically doesn't allow them to communicate with each other, but they don't know that.
Once they're silent, our natural defenses can remove the infection. Janda hopes the vaccines may one day be widely available.
Thanks, Suzanne. We'll want to ship something to a friend on Mars. It could cost you $140,000 a pound, and don't expect a return receipt for at least a couple of years. The costs of sending cargo into space are so high that if we eventually do establish colonies on the moon or Mars at all, they'll have to be self-sustaining. That means growing plants with super low-energy lights and recycling all organic wastes, yes, human wastes, back into power. All this in a completely controlled environment.
What you end up with is a closed-loop, regenerative, sustainable life support system. And plants are absolutely at the center of this in terms of providing oxygen, food, and even helping to process some wastes.
That's plant physiologist Kerry Mitchell of Purdue University. And he says the technology being developed for life in space could revolutionize food production right here on Earth.
Controlled environment agriculture on Earth is a coming thing in this 21st century. I think a lot of the recycling principles that we have learned working with NASA over these years can be rather directly applied to ground-based agriculture, and we can bring back winter vegetable, small fruit production, and even some ornamental crop production to the more northern regions of the world.
For instance, greenhouse lights are currently very heavy and hot, sucking up energy and wasting resources. But that won't work in space.
We have tried to develop lighting systems that can operate under low power, and the lights actually can go down into the leaf area of the closed crop without burning the crops and illuminate or light the entire inner canopy, which you can't do with overhead light.
Mitchell also envisions using organic wastes to heat controlled environment crops in the winter.
So if you think of a landfill as nature's bioreactor, it's making methane, which is a very high energy gas. It's like a natural gas that can be burned or utilized in a fuel cell. But if it's not, and it rises out of that landfill or that feedlot or that septic system, and it rises up into the atmosphere, it is a far worse greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide ever was. So if you can utilize these things for off-season or year-round controlled environment agriculture, cleaning up the environment, not having to pay the transportation fuel bill for bringing these products from thousands of miles away, it seems to me you're way ahead.
And Mitchell adds that besides feeding the world and saving the environment, there's an added benefit to implementing space-age agricultural techniques right here on Earth.
I think the way it's going, we're probably going to see these technologies become common even before we start using them in space. And that'll actually help the development of the space technologies, too, when things like this become off the shelf for regular terrestrial application.
Well, if growing space crops is a bit ambitious for your little slice of terra firma, how about starting smaller, say by growing your own roof? Justin Warner has looked into it.
Instead of shingles, shakes, and tiles, how about roofing your house with grasses, shrubs, and wildflowers? These so-called green roofs, which consist of a layer of plants and soil, then a waterproof barrier, and solid supported insulation underneath, are becoming popular in Europe, especially Germany. And they already adorn in a few landmark American buildings, including Chicago's City Hall and a major Ford auto plant. But according to biologist Erica Oberndorfer of St. Mary's University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, green roofs deserve better marketing in North America. She and her colleagues cataloged the benefits of green roofs in a recent issue of the journal Bioscience. For one thing, Oberndorfer says that green roofs moderate rooftop temperatures.
Which means your heating and cooling systems don't have to work as hard. And you can see your summer cooling costs reduced by half with the installation of a green roof.
She says a green roof can also provide a home for local wildlife. A third benefit is that a green roof absorbs excess storm water. This can help prevent heavy rains from overtaxing local sewage systems.
What a green roof does is it slows down the flow of water into our sewers. It traps water on the roof, and it releases it slowly over time, and it percolates slowly down into the gutters. So it doesn't place a burden on our stormwater management facilities.
Green roofs do have higher upfront installation costs than most traditional roofs, which is why she and her colleagues advocate government incentives for installing them. But they can be retrofitted to most existing roof designs. And Oberndorfer says that once it's installed, a well-planned green roof can mostly take care of itself. In other words, you probably won't need to go up there to mow it.
Thanks, Justin. Well, that's all for this week. Next week, how do you tell science from nonsense? You'll find out as we take on alternative medicine, vaccine scares, and ponder why we believe what we do, even if it has no basis in fact. And if you have too much nonsense in your life, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition and we'll set you straight. We've got a new story about science every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.